I still think that product marketers are not marketers. And I think a lot of it is a question of like categorization, but also origin. Like on the episode with Harvey Lee, he talked about like the brand man, and that the origin of marketing basically was a PMM.
So this is why product marketers aren't marketers in that traditional, in the traditional sense today, because a product marketer is going to come in and it's going to give you context.
Is that the modern product marketer should be more focused on influencing product, C-suite, and customer success that more than they should be enabling the sales team.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Product Marketing Life podcast, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. In this episode, I got a chance to sit down with the three boys behind the We're Not Marketers podcast, Eric Holland, Gab Bougeot, and Zach Roberts. And this episode, true to form, is all about hot takes, including the hot take that started it all. Product marketers are not marketers. These three have become friends of mine over the last number of months, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I think you will too. Enjoy the show. My three favorite not marketers. The We're Not Marketers boys.
This is how we're going to kick it off.
How the tables have turned. I was just thinking back on how we all met, and initially I was thinking when you had me on your podcast, but I'm realizing it's not just that. So Zach, you and I met at the PMA Summit in SF.
That's right.
Eric, you and I technically have not met in person, but we met, I think, on the Ready for Launch cohort.
Yes.
Like, I feel like our initial bond was just a lot of messages in the chat.
And then Gabby and I actually remember being like, ooh, Colin Majak's part of this.
Oh my gosh, don't even inflate my ego like that. Don't gas me up that way.
And Colin Majak is in this.
if only I could be that Jack. A running joke is that Gab, Eric, and I are constantly talking about Zach's traps. And they're really a sight to behold. This shirt doesn't do it justice, but they really are something.
The cats are looking up to him right now.
I have to imagine when you were selling, that was half of how you were closing deals. It's just like,
oh, sure.
Camera angles up. And people were just persuaded. Like, this guy knows what he's talking about.
It was just fun facts. That was the key to my sales motion. I'll just share historical fun facts about San Francisco.
Oh, is that it?
About your trap.
Yeah.
And then, Gab, you and I have never actually met, but I feel like, well, at least in person. So just on podcast episodes.
I'm not even sure if we had like a coffee chat, but we should definitely put that in the books.
Oh, we can make it happen. But in the meantime, we can do it live with an audience. But since I will say, since I came on your guys' podcast, season one, you guys are now on season two of We're Not Marketers, which I think Richard King quoted as PMA's favorite podcast. Was that?
He did.
I think that was the claim. So it's a big one. Y'all should listen to it if you haven't already. But since then, our LinkedIn thread of the four of us has become a type of emotional relief and therapy that I think is altogether consistent with what you guys bring with We're Not Marketers. I think people listen to your show and feel this sense of strong resonance and feeling like, oh, there's no BS here. These three are just explaining this job as it actually is and speaking to it in reality. Now, your audience might know you guys as the sales deck intern, sales water boy, and Frankenmarketer, but aside from We're Not Marketers, what do your day jobs look like?
Well, I'm Batman during the day. No. Currently, I'm at Clue, around a bunch of different product marketing activities alongside the new director, Cody. So that's what I've been doing for the past 4-ish months.
Sweet. I have to say, the first time that one of your emails hit my inbox and it was Eric from Clue, the amount of friendship pride I felt just through the roof. So that's been fun to watch.
I still actually don't think it's real when I see the little test emails come through and it says Eric from Clue. It still feels very real. But then my real job, 24/7 right now, brand new dad. Let's go.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
And we've, this is not at all the subject matter of PMA, but you and I have bonded a lot about the journey of becoming a dad as someone who didn't have a great dad. And that's just, that's a complicated and really beautiful healing journey. So yeah, it's fun having that level that we can bond on too.
Yeah, dude, I echo that. And also a couple of dads who have been in a position of having a baby on the way and losing a job, right?
Oh yeah, so, I forgot we a trauma bond on that one. That's yeah, a two-tier trauma bond.
PTSD is really connecting.
And then Gab and Zach, what do your day-to-days look like?
Complicated. No, I'll let Zach start.
Yeah, well, next month is going to be 1 year working for myself within break into product marketing. So
let's go.
You know, exciting. Yeah, really exciting. So it's been this past year, fractional PMM, like really focused on just like the sales marketing alignment. And like similar to what Colin, you and Eric were sharing, aside from having a kid, I did get laid off like at the start of July, and that's what prompted that journey too. So, hey, it's exciting how much 11 months have changed and having this conversation with you all today.
So there's kind of then two arms of what you're up to. You have kind of the fractional product marketer thing going, and then is break into product marketing. Are you still working with people who are trying to land a gig in that world, or have you kind of shifted just purely fractional?
I shifted a bit. I tell people, I'm like, yo, go talk to Yilin. Don't talk to me.
That's true. Yilin's coming on here soon, and she kind of is the authority on that.
I'm just the Robin now. I say, yo, I'm like, I'll help you out if you come from the sales end, but I'm like, if you want to level it up, go talk to Yilin.
I will say though, I did just have someone who's a salesperson DM me saying, hey, I want to break into product marketing. Any advice? And I told them they need to start following you. I don't know if they followed through on that or they connected with you, but you were the first person that came to mind, specifically that path from sales to PMM, that you're the guy in my mind.
Colin, it's going to be the preview to my hot take here in the next several minutes.
I can't wait. And then Gab, tell me about your days.
My day are the day of starting a solopreneur, I guess. I incorporated myself last September, but I've been going full-time at it since March 22nd. So a little over 2 months now. And basically I started Press X to Market, which is right now my messaging consultancy. So very much in love with the world of startups in early stages and helping them convert initial interest into paying customers with a better, more data-backed messaging, basically. So my days are right now a bit chaotic, a bit of context switching, but I'm loving every second of it. And otherwise I'm working with these two goofs into We're Not Marketers, and very, very excited about it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm continually impressed by just how much market awareness We're Not Marketers has. You guys have built an entire podcast around a single controversial take. And that is this take that product marketers are not marketers. And you guys took some heat for that. Some well-known product marketers roasted you on LinkedIn. You've had guests disagree with you. But I want to rewind kind of back to that Genesis story. Can you guys tell me how the podcast got started? How did you go from this take to we're going to build a whole podcast around that take?
Any one of you two that want to take this one, or do you want me to be the...
Dude, this is one of my favorite stories, so I'll tell it. So all right, go ahead. I knew Zach because Zach used to be at Dropbox and was a competitor of mine. So I followed him slightly to try to steal any juice that I could find. Also, because I could tell he was a stunt. Found Gab and was just habitually liking everything he put out. Then one day Gab reached out, had an idea cooking, kind of connected then Zach to me. And that's when the trio happened. And of course we had some conversations on what we want to talk about specifically, how we're going to position and, all the good stuff that's happened since then. But that's the dirty version.
Okay. Gab, Zach, anything you guys would add?
Yeah, Eric was liking everything and he was commenting just boost under my boost. And it was like, oh, it's free love. Free real estate, baby. So
a lot of substance in my LinkedIn.
And then we just the initial project was just like roasting landing pages or like home pages on their messaging and positioning.
I remember.
But then
that.
I realized that videos editing is really not my strong suit. So we put that aside, and then I just connected Zach with Eric during a chat, and that chat specifically, I don't know if it's like a day or two, but Zach, you just told us you got laid off like very soon, and it kind of started a beautiful friendship that is now listened by a couple thousand people. So very, very excited about that. How can I say that? Just harmony. Moment when we could vent yes. together into like a platform, I guess.
Yeah. It really started out of a venting session that like, with this whole idea of like, what is a product marketer today? And like for a function that is extremely valued, how is it so misunderstood? You ask three people what a product marketer is, you might get three different answers.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think if nothing else, if you look at the job descriptions for product marketers, it'll give you a quick revelation that it's not well understood.
Yeah.
It's like if you take any other roles, basically, and you play the game of the seven differences, it's going to be very hard. But when you go into two job offer of PMMs, it's going to be very easy to find the differences between the two because there's always a different understanding of what the role is. And I think this is one of the reasons why we started a pod, to show what greats look like and basically learn as well what our experts saying and what's their take as well on our own POV.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one last nugget to this, Colin, is I think we kind of all just took like a risk. We didn't do a lot of like good product marketing work in terms of researching a lot of fellow product
workers. What are you talking about? I did research. What do you mean?
We three of us got together and felt a type of way.
Don't
tell me you had thousands of research.
I had a statistic. Research doc I shared with y'all.
Yeah, but Zach, nobody read it.
Yeah, I was just saying that doc has not been open to this
just
thing.
Just like the positioning
doc.
We're
going to post that doc. We're going to post that doc in the show notes. There was a doc.
But honestly, Colin, like I think we all felt very similarly, like misfits. You'll see that word pretty regularly from us. We all kind of questioned that same thing. Like, why are we feeling like outcasts? And we're going to assume that we're not the only three that feel this way. So we kind of took a leap of faith on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those times where I'm all for customer research, but I think when you are the ICP, there's a certain advantage you have there. There's so much kind of quantitative stuff that is caught and not taught and doesn't necessarily have to be picked up in an interview in order to actually still have a really strong pulse on your customer. Like this was my experience. The way I broke into product marketing was a company said, I broke in at this company called Subsplash that serves churches. And they looked at my background and they're like, oh, you were a pastor. We'll hire you. Just because the thinking was, you know, our audience. And I think the success of We're Not Marketers is kind of based on that same thing. You guys just knew the audience. You didn't necessarily have to, well, Zach wrote a research doc, but you didn't necessarily have to write that research doc because it comes from this deeply internalized knowledge of your listener. Now, you built this podcast around this take. You guys have this kindred spirit around this feeling of being misunderstood and feeling like you don't fit in with the traditional marketer bucket. And you guys got some love, you got some vitriol for that. And what I love is you've sat down with a lot of guests, many of whom disagreed with your take. Now, I will admit, because Eric took me to task on this, that I waffled a bit on my answer and gave the it depends answer, which makes for really bad social clips. But I would be curious for you guys, I mean, as you're continuing to sit down with, I would say, some of the giants in the PMM space, has your mind changed at all or even a tiny bit? Are product marketers marketers?
Great question. Ooh. Does anyone want to answer before I just throw up all over the place how I feel about it?
I can say me, it's going to be very quick, but I still think that product marketers are not marketers. And I think a lot of it is a question of like categorization, but also origin. Like on the episode with Harvey Lee, he talked about like the brand man, and that the origin of marketing basically was a PMM. And he's kind of explaining very much that like the fourth element to kind of manage different brand was like sales enablement, positioning and messaging, competitive intel, all of those things.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go into the weeds too much. Go watch the episode. I guess it'll be in the show notes. But I still strongly believe in that POV. I think it's a very key point of our differentiation. And yeah, the mind is not about to change right now.
Okay. That's so interesting because in my mind, I've started to slide more firmly into thinking that product marketers are marketers. And a lot of that is that I do trace it back to the origin. If you ask the question, you have a technical founder and you have that first product and you hire a marketer, what are they doing? They're doing product marketing to start, ideally. And so I've tried to answer it in the absence of headcount, who's doing this?
No, definitely. It's an argument that when, and I feel like it's still coming back, and it's always about the context as well. But yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, we have your answer.
Yeah. Zach, Eric.
I'll jump in here. Doing this podcast, my point of view has just become stronger with more evidence as to why product marketers aren't marketers. So last season we had Pep Leha, and I think that was like the fastest answer we ever got from anyone when we asked this same question. He's like, what's marketing? He's like, well, it's designed to make selling easier. And he's like, well, product marketers are marketers. And to that origin point, yes, they are, but that's not marketing today. In B2B SaaS, is that there feels like there's more of a fixation on tasks and deliverables than what it's designed to do to help make selling easier. Like some client calls I have, they're like, well, we need one pagers. We need this. We know that. I was like, okay, well,
yeah.
How come? Like, what are we trying to do? Oh, we need to talk about the product. But then me coming as a former seller, I've been in conversations where you give a one pager and it's like, okay, thanks. Like in that instance, does that help move the sale forward? So this is why product marketers aren't marketers in the traditional sense today, because a product marketer is going to come in and it's going to give you context. If anything, the product marketer is that still remains the origin of how, like Gab said it, of like the brand man today. But in how marketing is played out today, product marketers aren't marketers.
I like the nuance to your point in that product marketing's role heavily adapts based on its context. And even whether it can resonate with marketing in part depends on, well, how are you actually doing marketing and defining what success for marketing looks like? Wherever you land on the side of the fence, I think recognizing just how contextual PMM is massive for that. But Eric, I feel like you've been sitting on your hands waiting very patiently to give your take on this.
Well, first, before I give any take, I just want to say, Zach, when you said you hand them a one pager and they're like, thanks, that's the exact response I feel like everyone gives when they get handed a one pager is, oh, thanks. That's the email response I picture in a buyer sales relationship. Hey, can I have a one pager? Yeah, here you go. Oh, thanks. All right. Never hear from you again. But yeah, I agree with these two. My point is definitely firmed up, primarily around the premise of, I think our fairy tale land is, yes, product marketers are marketers, right? That's what we want it to be. But if we actually look at the state of affairs? No, it's not. And if you were to ask people in general, you know, what does a B2B marketer do? I guarantee none of the stuff that we do makes that list, that top 10 list, right? It'll be all a bunch of other things like running social media accounts, creating, you know, videos, yada, yada, the list will go on. I don't think anyone will actually be like researching the buyer, conducting positioning exercises, creating value prop messaging, you know, influencing product roadmap. They're not thinking about that when they think marketing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my premise is that, yeah, like if we want to, you know, live in a dream state, product marketers are marketers. But if, you know, we all look at ourselves in the mirror and look at the state of affairs, I'd say it's not.
All right. So I'm hearing that that not only have you guys continued to take that position, but cement has been poured. It's solidified. You guys are set in stone that product marketers are not marketers. Now, in the spirit of we're not marketers, if people have not listened to it, I wanted to structure this episode a little bit differently. Normally, I would pick, here's a niche that you guys go really big on. And we've tapped on that a little bit on just the nature of the role. But in the spirit of your podcast, I think your guys' location for we're not marketers is Spicy Town, if I remember correctly, where you say the company is based.
Yep. So right next to each of you. Right next to Guy Fieri.
I asked each of you to bring one part product marketing spicy take, not the foundational hot take of we're not marketers. It has to be a different one. And I would love for each of you to share that take. And if the need arises, I would love to have a little bit of spirited live disagreement. Does that sound good?
Gotcha. Absolutely.
Okay.
Perfecto.
And Erica, I picked one in particular that I think will cause a bit of a stir, particularly with my good buddy Zach, who loves sales. Like, so I'm gonna start it with that. And my POV is that the modern product marketer should be more focused on influencing product, C-suite, and customer success that more than they should be enabling the sales team. So I'm going to throw that out into the wind and get some immediate reactions.
I'm just curious why them more.
Same. Yeah, like
you're saying, what was that, Zach?
Oh, well, I'll be curious why them more. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I want to hear more.
Yeah, right. Why sales over? Why product and C-suite and CS? Why is sales getting thrown to the bottom of the ladder here?
That's the question, right? And so I think about it kind of similarly to like when I was in sales. What are the things that I need, right? So do I need that one pager, or do I need a simpler way for my buyer to make a decision? Right. That could include things like obviously pricing on the homepage. That could be Nevadic tours so I can see the product before I actually demo, or I can enable the rest of the stakeholders. Right. I think about things, would a salesperson rather have an enablement session done, or they rather have really good win loss so they can actually figure out what's going on, you know, in the decision-making process. If I was a salesperson, would I rather have a battle card made for me, or would I rather have someone go fix the damn product so when I go sell it, it's the best thing that we've ever, you know, seen since sliced bread, instead of, you know, dancing around the conversation of why we're lacking in this feature or that feature. So I think of it from that perspective, that if you're helping those other functions, you're actually really helping the sales team without the traditional sense of sales enablement.
Yeah. So what I hear you then saying, Eric, is actually not deprioritizing the enablement of sales, but trying to question the traditional ways that people think about sales enablement. Because for sure, I think about if you have a clean pricing model, your sales team will thank you because that is one of the stickiest parts of their job. Or if you have great crisp messaging, that ultimately will serve the sales team. Am I tracking right with that?
Yeah, yeah, pretty close to that. Like, essentially, you know, you can spend all your time just doing the traditional things around how you would enable sales, or you could look at it as more of a buyer enablement. And that's some of the recent conversations we've had, especially with Anna Borboka, is I firmly believe that if you focus more on the buyer and how you can simplify their process, all of that funnels back into sales. And they are, like you said, they're going to love you for it.
But I think that that problem is not with sales. It boils down to how the product is talked about internally. Because as someone who's been in sales, like, I've been in conversations where it's like, well, talk about the features. And like, there'll be some instances where you push back. I'll be like, they don't really care about the features. Not because we haven't really identified the problem they care about. One example I can give is that, like, a few years back, we were in a sales enablement call. And there was a new product launch coming out, and one of the sellers asked her, like, "Hey, like, who would be the best person for this product?" And the director of product just responded back and said, "Anyone who cares about asset management." That's pretty much like saying everyone in the market. And I just saw the call, like, the people on the Zoom call just drop it, because it was like, that could be anyone. That doesn't make my job any easier. So.
It sounds like they didn't have a product marketer along with that product manager. I'm just going to say.
There was a whole team.
A product marketer would not have allowed that statement to come out.
We would have to hit the mute button. But then it's like, it goes back to your point. It's that influence piece. So I don't know. Like, I got something to say, but when my time comes, I'll let y'all know. But
yeah, I think I'm with you, Eric, on the idea of influence. And even how influence has to flow. Like, if you want to talk about the actual flow of influence, I do think PMM should be influencing C-suite, making their way down into product, which will ultimately make its way out to what is in market. In this case, sales has to represent that product in the market. I think in terms of end game, I think the work of a PMM is driving all to that end game. So, like, order of operations, C-suite, work your way down. But I do think the end goal is, if I don't enable sales and I haven't made their job easier, that I've lost the plot to a degree. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say don't take your eyes off of making sales jobs easier. But I guess what I'm trying to differentiate is there's levels to this, right? You just spitting out content and talk tracks all day, from my opinion, right? My spicy take, that's a lot less effective than trying to make a really transparent pricing model and then put that pricing model up on the website so that they know what that is before they ever get to the AE. Or creating a super efficient onboarding process with your customer success team so that once they close the deal, and part of that sales motion is talking about what your onboarding experience would be like, instead of what your win-loss says, you've got the shitty onboarding experience where you're running rogue for the first 60 days.
Yeah.
That directly impacts sales success. And that's where I say maybe put your energy into those items instead of what we... Again, back to kind of the what, how do you view marketing? What people view sales enablement as. Yeah. I think there's other activities you can do that should be put into that bucket.
Make sure your bucket basically doesn't have a hole in it before trying to put water, basically.
Yeah, it's I'm hearing you say that.
A weird analogy, but I guess it'll work.
Yeah. And if there is a hole in the bucket, just put more water in there. It's just so then...
Just hire more SDRs.
Hire more SDRs.
Wow. That'll get you the pipeline you need.
Dude, I got laid off. I got laid off from a company that was like, we're not hitting revenue goals. We're going to lay off all of marketing. Not all of marketing, 40% of marketing, and just hire a bunch of 20-year-old SDRs.
And that's the benefit of product marketers not being marketers.
Yeah, I got canned with it, though. I was still thought of it. But I think, Eric, what I'm hearing almost is to prioritize the systems over assets. And I think typically people think of the enablement of sales as produce an asset that then a salesperson can turn around and use in a call. And it actually serves sales more effectively if you are building systems around that customer interaction, like a pricing model, like onboarding, like messaging top of funnel that is actually driving higher quality leads into the funnel and more qualified leads into the funnel. And I think I'm in agreement. The hot take is you can ignore a request for an asset if you're working on something like that, that is more important than that asset.
Let me know what your Slack message response is when you get that, hey, I need this thing. And you're like, no, I got something more important.
I kind of had to do that recently, but again, I want to hear what Zach and Gav have to say on their hot take. So we can come back to that if there's an appropriate spot for it. Zach, it sounds like you're ready and it's relevant around sales. So I want to go to you next.
I got you. I got y'all here. So this is what it is. The best PMMs in the game, they know sales from direct experience. If you have sold in any type of form, it doesn't have to be B2B SaaS. You can sell shoes, you can be selling cars. It gives you more direct empathy and answers back to that question we're talking earlier, is context of what a seller might need to move the deal forward and what sometimes they may not need. So like Colin, to your point, like, let's go back to that really quick. It's that, hey, if someone gives me a request that, hey, I need this, you have a better intuition as to what is BS and what is not. I'll give you an example. I had a sales rep at a previous company. We're on a conversation. They're like, hey, we need a one pager about Microsoft. I'm going to cut it clear right now. We didn't work at Microsoft. So I asked, I was like, hey, like, you know, that's a really great idea. Like, what about this? Like, how is this going to help you move the deal forward? Well, the prospect asked about it. Oh, I'm curious. Like, what about Microsoft? Are they evaluating against us? Like, what are they looking for? And then he just kind of stopped. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Well, I'm like, well, maybe let's uncover that a bit more. I'm happy to work with you. But it makes you less of an order taker. It makes you more of a strategic partner to see, like, okay, like, because everything at the end of the day is about, like you said, Colin, Eric, it's like comes down to the revenue. Is that if I know what's going to help us move the deal forward and have that intuition, that context, it gives you an easier way of what questions to ask and maybe what questions not to ask to understand what needs to get done.
Does anyone disagree with Zach? Because I agree with you full-heartedly as being a guy who did sales what I call the hard way compared to what AEs have now.
What do you call the hard way?
Standing in a Sam's Club or a Best Buy and just, you know, taking 200 no's to the chin to find your one yes to sell one DirecTV subscription to someone who never came in for DirecTV.
With the insurance as well, because it pays commission.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I worked at Best Buy as well.
So legit, just standing there cold pitching, right? People are cold calling, cold emailing. No, I'm there face to face, ready to take one to the chin if someone's having a bad day. And yeah, taking, 200 pitches-ish to get the one yes for the day. So
what you're saying here is that the product teams in SaaS need to do a rotation program at Best Buy sales floor to really understand.
Yeah, man. Like I was going head to head against Comcast every day. Imagine you're trying to sell a CEO and a CFO on a $50,000, software subscription. I'm trying to convince an 80-year-old man who's had Comcast for 50 years that he should give a complete stranger his social security number over the phone so he can get a satellite dish installed on his roof. That is what I call the dirty.
Okay, so I think, Zach, I don't have a traditional sales background. I worked at Apple as a retail salesperson, and that barely counts because people come in and they are ready to buy at Apple. It's like if anything, there's this kind of guiding them to the right thing. Yes. If a suite, to use your 80-year-old example, Eric, to not to be too ageist, but say an an elderly person comes in and they're like, I need the 15-inch MacBook Pro. I knew they probably didn't need that and they just wanted the screen real estate. So how could I guide them to something cheaper and give them a better experience? Like, I have that background. But I think where I agree is I think the persuasion required and just how much of marketing and product marketing is, I think at its best, it's persuasion at scale. You're thinking about the entire, you're not thinking about one individual, you're thinking about the entire market. And you're thinking about how do I frame this thing to reach and make sense with a massive audience and have it land with that audience, as opposed to at sales, you're doing that at this micro level. But that ability to frame and persuade that marks all good sellers, I think that makes for good product marketers. I can't think of a better background to come from.
No,
I like how you frame that, Colin, actually, because like I look at it, our job is to change the minds of others. And now I want to change that word of others to the masses, right? Like you're supposed to make that mass change of people's, you know, minds, and sales is that best way to do that, right? You're coming in with some way of doing something, and whether it's competitive or not, we are changing your mind to go make a purchase. So
yeah, I think April Dunford spilled a lot of ink around this, but that essentially the goal of product marketing is to articulate a change, how the market thinks about your problem and then your product. Like your response, you own that, you own market perception. And so for sure.
Yeah. And go ahead. I was going to cut you off.
Well, I was just going to say there might be some disagreement in the comment section if we post that take, but I think none of us are really taking you to task here. I should have played devil's advocate more, but I just also agree with you.
Hey, put it on LinkedIn. Those people will come out from the trenches.
Okay.
Guarantee it.
Gab, do you have any difference of opinion?
No, I agree. And I feel like sales is kind of part of everything, right? Like even as you're like very young and you're trying to ask your parent for like $20 to buy something, I feel like you're still trying that persuasion aspect and almost like that psychology aspect. I don't feel like I'm a good salesman, and I kind of started my career a bit in that. I was a junior rep at Pepsi, and then I was selling beer by calling like convenience store and telling them to buy cases of beer for Abinbev. But yeah, other than that, I would say that once you stop categorizing sales as something you're not necessarily good at, and you realize that you always have to persuade people to do stuff, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah. All right, Gab, we've got a few minutes left. I want to hear your hot take.
All right. So my hot take is for early stage startups, message market fit is more important than product market fit.
So I'm willing to change my mind on this, but I do disagree with you.
Okay. Why?
Well, Han, can you explain more about, I think before I just go straight to it, can you explain more? What do you mean about message market fit versus product market fit? And what's the general thinking behind it?
Yeah, perfect. So product market fit to me is you want to have enough people that wants your product so you can achieve that repeated revenue, basically. We achieve product market fit. We are able to achieve repeated revenue. People, we have basically a demand for our product market fit, basically. But there's other components to PMF to me. There's also like, do I have a model where I can find and keep people sustainably to my product? And there's also, do I have a way of delivering that product at scale? So that's PMF. Message market fit to me is basically three components. The value. What is the value that you're bringing to the target market? What problem do you solve for that specific person? The differentiation aspect as well. Like, how are you unique with the value that you're delivering? What's your onlyness in that sense? And then there's the POV, you know, what do you believe in? What are your values and how all of that kind of sync together? I'm really seeing message market fit as an index of the offer or the value I'm trying to communicate right now to a specific target market resonates. And my reasoning around that is if your message doesn't make sense and people are unable to catch your value, reaching repeated revenue is step 9 and you're at step 1, hence, or maybe 0. So that's my take.
Okay. So we have some agreement here. I think the way I've been thinking about message market fit is, in contrast to product market fit, is that message market fit is much more easily changed. If you have a message in market today, you can change your hero text and your text on your website in an hour and get it out tomorrow. And so there's this ability to like flash in a pan, throw it out there, roll it back, put it out there, roll it back. But I think even if you find a message that an audience resonates with, if your product cannot back up that message and it can't stand by that message and it doesn't fit with it, then you've found a message that makes for great content, and you might even get people into your funnel. But then I have this question of, will you actually close them? And so I see message market fit as a way to test your product market fit, insofar as if that message really closely matches what your product is capable of.
Right. That reasoning makes perfect sense. I would just say that if the aspect of can you walk the talk is a priority, it kind of falls under one of the key elements of messaging, which is social proof, which is show me the money, show me results people got. So I feel like if you have good messaging, you should have that like built in, included. But the way I'm really seeing it, and like, it's just been a situation that ultimately message marketed what kind of pushed me to start my own thing, because I saw like 50% of startups that were working with in the business development agency that were not focusing on their messaging and positioning. And the other half that were able to test things, that had customer data and that was running around at that index that is telling you, you have enough data and enough like replies, conversion rates, meeting book, all of that to indicate that people want that, right? So basically, I really feel like that aspect always needs to be, at least for most cases, done first, because if you don't have the foundation, it's going to be very difficult to kind of get to that point. Startups are always, at least most of them, are very, very much relying on referrals and warm intros. And back to that 50%, I really saw that the one with message market fit, or at least efforts towards it, had a lot better results. So I realized, well, if it's always a game of convincing people, I'm just going to start my own thing and really focus down on that. So it's like referrals, warm intro, outbounds, but then you get to a point when you plateau and you're always testing new messages without the data. So message market fit is not at all a priority. And I keep hearing, we want to achieve PMF, we want to achieve PMF. But the average time by Lenny's podcast to reach product market fit for most funded companies is roughly 2 years. And most early stage startups don't even have that runway. So
I see where you're coming from. It's like for the purpose of testing and experimentation, message market fit makes more sense. But then, Colin, so what you're saying is that at a certain point, you got to deliver the product.
Good.
Yeah,
exactly.
Now, that's an interesting way to think about it. Yeah. And particularly if you see message market fit as something that you can change to test multiple markets. Because like a lot of times this starts where you hear all these stories all the time where a founder's built a product and they think this product is going to be awesome for this customer. And then they start going out to this customer and they don't give a shit. Like they don't want that product. Yeah. But if you could take that message and you actually go take it to this other customer, and it turns out this market over here liked your thing and you didn't even build it for them. And so I think seeing it, if you're seeing message market fit as a tool to serve product market fit, I think I could agree with you. The thing that I was concerned about, and partially because marketing gets a bad rap for this, is that we start talking about a product that doesn't do the thing that we're saying it's going to do. And we start talking about a problem, or even think about message market fit, you start agitating a problem. You're like, hey, salesperson, isn't it awful when XYZ happens?
Well, that isn't message. That ain't message market fit. That's scamming market fit right there.
Yeah.
We have a new acronym in Tagnight.
I guess, that's where my concern in part was coming from, is like, you've got to, if you can't actually go from, because I can spin up content that gets people engaged. Like that, I feel like I can do while I'm sleeping. That's just not hard. I do think a product that actually works in real time for a specific use case with a customer is a lot harder to build. And that sometimes you'll see customers climb over a mountain of crappy messaging to get their hands on a product that actually works well. So that's sort of where my brain's coming from. But I could see them as, I mean, it's yin yang ultimately.
I mean,
I do agree. Yeah, like, 100%. Yeah. If some companies like tested their messaging in the wild, I think there'll be less all in one platforms in the world.
God, I hate all in one.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
I would garbage. Say too that.
Yeah, I would say that if you're a PMM and you're working on messaging stuff because you're not a misfit and you're not doing everything related to marketing and you're able to work on those bigger initiative, bigger projects, trying different target market and trying to kind of achieve that index of message market that can be a good initiative, as you said, Colin, to really test this out. The closing statement of my hot take would be that, again, the average time is roughly 2 years.
Yeah.
But based on like the research that he did on Lenny's podcast, most founders often never fully feel PMF. So the difference with that is when you have the right message, when people are excited, when you're showing an offer, you know automatically when someone is excited, right? It's very, very obvious. So is it better to, as a startup with tons of things in your mind, to focus on what you can actually measure and understand that is a good buying trigger, or focusing on something that you have no leverage necessarily at the beginning of knowing is happening?
Yeah. The time sensitivity to this is interesting because I haven't thrown that, heard that stat thrown around, the 2 year kind of runway thing, but that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of times if you throw a message out there and it lands at a startup, you can maybe be scrappy enough to actually turn around and say, oh, this changes the roadmap. Like let's build something that goes, that matches this messaging, particularly, particularly at the startup level. Now that's super interesting. I'm open to that reprioritization in part.
And, toss in here. I look at this too. Like if you've got a PLG product, like my opinion is you probably don't need the message market fit. Whereas if we're looking at a sales-led motion, I'd flip that. Because if you've just got an awesome product that one person tries and is willing to tell other people, however they want to communicate that,
yeah,
it's up to them, right? And you can get, I think, going in that right way. Whereas I don't think that's a recipe for success from a sales-led motion. I think it would be a little bit more beneficial for the message market fit, particularly because if you've got something and you're still not sure of like how it serves the customer, but you do do due diligence to communicate it properly. I see the wiggle room because deal cycles are a lot longer to be able to make those necessary changes and be like, yep, that thing that you needed, we got that.
Yep. You've got deal cycles. That's a really great take, Eric. You've got deal cycles that are aiding you there. You've got, in most PLG products, it's easy on, easy off. And so if someone gets in the product and they think this doesn't fit, they're out. And they're just not going to sign back in probably, or it'll take immense pressure for them to sign back in. Most time in a sales-led motion, the customer's not experienced the product enough. But if they're bought and they finally get into it and they're like, oh crap, there's some issues here, but I'm bought into how you're thinking about it, message market fit, you have a chance for them to stick around for a little bit and just hope that you can meet their expectations before they churn out. Bad experience. I would not recommend that. I still think, I'm saying that out loud. I'm like, God, you got to make sure that product actually fits.
You've got them stuck for a year contract to figure it out.
Like, it's like, damn, that's skeevy. If you don't nail that product market fit, oh, I don't know, man.
Well, you got 9 months left. Might as well just figure it out until then, right?
Yeah, 9 months, wow. They're trapped. Well, boys, thank you. This was so much fun. And I think I could do this on the weekly. It's a lot of fun. If people want to keep up with you three and what you're building at We're Not Marketers, what's the best way to do that?
We have a website, So you can go at notmarketerswithans.com. And we also have a newsletter. So every week during our active seasons, we pushing episode weekly. And every Friday we have a newsletter when we break it down, when we're really showing you what we saw on the what's happening around product marketing, either on Reddit, either our latest memes, everything like that. So notmarketerswithans.com and subscribe to the newsletter. It's free, it's weekly, and we're doing our best to make it enjoyable.
Sweet. Notmarketers.com.
Yeah, and then go find us on LinkedIn if you don't see any of our tomfoolery yet.
Oh yeah. I will post tagging all three of you and We're Not Marketers when this episode goes live. But guys, again, thank you. Thanks for continuing to advocate for the role of product marketing. I know that I have listened to episodes that have had me laughing out loud with just understanding and feeling seen. So glad to have you guys in the space.
Thank you very much for having us. It was awesome.
Great to be here.
This was dope.
Thanks, Kyle. All right,
thanks, boys.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.